Episode number 157.
You know, and I think one of the things that people don't think about is, you know, how are you going to exit your business, particularly with an internet business? You know, what ultimately is the goal if you meet your growth? Are you going to sell it? Are you going to pass it on to your kids? If you're going to sell your site, you know, you really need to think about, well, what's the value of that site?
Welcome to the Be Real Show with Travis Too Tall and Hop, where we talk about life, dreams, social media, and business.
Well, hello, and welcome to the Be Real Show with Travis Too Tall and Huff. Folks, I'm fired up today because we are going to bring you some legal advice and also some knowledge for your business as we are all now in the internet. And I'm pumped because we're bringing you our featured guest today, Richard Chapo. Richard, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Thank you for having me on. If I can barely speak.
Are you ready to be real, my man?
I am.
Let's do this. Just so you guys have a little insight, my man Richard is located in the beautiful sunny San Diego. And he is an internet business lawyer who's been practicing since 1992, my man. Nice. And specializing specifically in helping online entrepreneurs avoid the crap your pants moments. As maybe we've experienced that with copyright infringement letters or threats on operating online. And he's actually traveled the world extensively, living in Siberia, as well as spending lots of time in Europe, Central America, and Asia. But I'm really interested because you're right. I mean, today is more than ever where people are dealing with issues with their website, issues with social media, you know, infringement on this, right?
Absolutely. You know, we went through a period where the internet was kind of the wild, wild west. And now, unfortunately, we're kind of in the Empire Strikes Back period where, you know, we're seeing all kinds of laws and regulations issued, you know, that really business owners kind of need to know about.
Now, outside of hiring you, which is obviously, you know, the go-to, if you have the money, if you're someone that obviously runs a business that needs that protection, you know, you got to hire a professional. Can't do it on your own. But if you are doing it on your own, building your own new website right now, let's say you're in the process of it and you're a solo entrepreneur, you're just getting your business started, what are the one thing that someone could do to help protect themselves, you know, from the get-go?
You know, I think if you're just launching off the get-go, you know, obviously, yeah, cash flow is going to be a huge issue. You know, what are you going to spend money on? I think the one thing would probably be talk to an accountant just to make sure you're getting set up in the right way.
Right.
So you can take advantage of, you know, some of the new taxes, not to get into politics, but, you know, there is a new tax act out there that gives pass-through entities a rather huge tax deduction. It starts in 2018. So you want to make sure that you're positioned to take care of that because that could be the difference between being profitable and viable and failing. The other thing I think is, you know, when you're having that website designed, you want to make sure that you have an agreement with whoever the designer is, and you can find some pretty basic templates online. They're not great, but better than nothing. That make sure that that copyright is transferred to you once you make the payments.
Right.
And then also that the images, the graphics, and things of that sort that are being used on your site, you know, the person actually has authority to use them. Unfortunately, what we see sometimes, and I get calls on this, are people will pay for, you know, a website that a freelancer does, and, you know, the freelancer doesn't really understand copyright, although they understand web design.
Right.
And they'll use photos or graphics or, you know, code snippets, you know, without taking copyright into account. And then I just had this with a chiropractor. You know, the chiropractor gets a letter from Getty Images saying,
Yes, you owe us lots of money.
Right. You owe us $5,000 for the use of this photo and, you know, so on and so forth. And, you know, we'll sue you, or you can settle by sending a check now.
Yeah.
You know, I think everybody's kind of familiar with those letters. So yeah. I think those would probably be, you know, the positions you'd really want to start out with. And then on top of that, you know, your privacy policy is a very weird thing with the internet now. You know, most of us expected there to be a lot more regulation and rules developing over the last 5 years. I don't think many of us expected privacy to be the area where you would see, you know, a lot of crackdown and wars, but unfortunately we are.
Right. Yeah, your data is important, folks. I mean, everyone, every company in the world is trying to get access to your data. I mean,
absolutely.
And they want to use it to market to you. They want to use it to talk to you. They want to use it to know you better, you know, and it's important. So knowing, you know, what's out there is obviously so important too. And obviously people that are on your website, you need to make sure that if you're collecting data from them, that you let them know that you're not going to be selling this data. You're not going to, you know, go through the traditional privacy policy, correct?
Right. Unfortunately, we're seeing the traditional privacy policy kind of become antiquated because we have new laws. The EU has issued the GDPR, which is a nasty little regulation. And it's not little. It's 400 pages.
Comprehensive.
Yes.
So now we're having to revise those privacy policies, are you saying?
Well, first you have to do an analysis to see if, you know, you have to comply. The GDPR contains what's called territorial scope provision. It's Article 3, and it says essentially if you're offering goods or services, even if for free, to the EU, to people who are located in the EU, not citizens, just people who are located there, then you have to comply. So there's this great debate now what that actually means. And, you know, we can look at case law and other regulations and things of that sort, but it's much broader than what people think. So if you're in the US and you have, you know, 10% or 20% of your sales to people in the EU,
right?
You know, well, you're probably going to have to comply.
Start changing the policies then.
Yeah, and it's radical changes. It's not, these are not simple changes. It's not just the policy. You have to have record keeping. You have to have data flow maps, so you know where people are coming in, what information you're gathering. You have to have what's called a legal basis before you can collect information from them. That's why you're seeing sites with all the little pop-ups now for
everywhere.
Consent, right? That's what they're trying to do. Gotcha. One of the problems with the EU is it's a very poor business environment because they don't really differentiate between Facebook and a little startup with two people in the garage.
Right. So they're not giving you any idea to the scale factor. I mean, the fact that Facebook is a much bigger entity than real-time outsource or just anyone's little small local business, you know, I mean.
Absolutely. The requirements are the same. And so it's very hard for entrepreneurs to comply. And the problem is with that bigger scope of, you know, territorial scope, if it's applying to U.S. companies and, you know, a lot of the U.S. companies are tiny and just starting out, you know, how do they deal with that burden?
Right. And
unfortunately, California just passed the California Consumer Privacy Protection Act, which is very similar to the GDPR. It doesn't go into effect until 2020.
Gotcha. So we're all going to have to start getting that even dialed in for us that have businesses in California.
Right.
So yeah. Majority of our clients are in Cali.
Right. Yeah. So it's amazing. Ugly world in privacy.
It's a good thing for you, maybe, you know, my man. It's a good thing for obviously a successful entrepreneur that's helping businesses understand it, you know, which is awesome.
It is to an extent that actually the California law isn't too bad. And the California law, in comparison to the GDPR, does have those thresholds.
Gotcha.
So if you're not doing,
larger business.
Right. Yeah. So if you're just starting out, you don't have to comply, you know, and then obviously you have to watch your numbers. And then once you get to a certain point where you trigger any of the thresholds that are in the law, then you do have to comply. But there's a buffer there that gives you a chance to get up and running, you know, and actually become viable versus GDPR where there really isn't.
There's no barrier to that. Oh, God, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Thank you for bringing that to our knowledge. I'm sure maybe most people probably didn't know that.
Unfortunately online, I think if you read about the GDPR, you'd be best to look at legal sites to read about it. Wouldn't read about it on SEO sites or e-commerce sites.
Right. Cause they're going to do their own thing, huh?
Well, yeah. And most of what you see out there is just not right. There's this thing. If you catch one, you know, if you capture one email address from somebody in Europe, you must comply. And that's just not the rule.
Got you. So follow my man or anyone that's putting out good legal advice around the topic, possibly.
Yeah, there's a site called Lexology. There are a lot of different legal sites out there. I mean, I'm sure Nolo probably even has something. But I would look to those because you're going to get a bit better overview of what's going on.
And as far as your business and your customers, who's your sweet spot? Who do you love to work with? What kind of businesses do you love working with?
You know, I like working with smaller businesses that are often just starting out or relatively new, maybe 1 to 5 years, because they're, you know, at that point they're viable and I help people grow. Kind of the satisfaction that I get out of my practice is, with much of the law, particularly I was in litigation before, and all I did was litigation, wrongful death cases. It tends to be very tear down. You know, there's things being taken apart.
Right.
And with this, my practice now, it's much more helping people build up.
Yes.
I don't help them from the technical aspect, but I can help them avoid landmines and things of that sort that are out there.
Right.
You know, the Getty Images letters, those kinds of things.
Or in general, just building a big business and then having someone trying to invade on it. I mean,
right. Yeah. You know, and their basic issues, you know, unfortunately something we see a lot online is you'll have, you know, more than two people start a business and they don't put together, you know, an initial founder's agreement, which can be pretty simple. And then what happens is, you know, they get 6 months down the line and one person, you know, stops carrying their weight. And
yeah. Yep. And they're like, what's going on?
Right. It gets ugly. Can you fire them? Yeah. But they're still going to get, you know, their piece of profit and,
right.
You know, and it gets into all this nasty stuff. So avoiding things like that. So, that, you know, you can focus on running your business and growing it instead of, you know, staring at the ceiling at night, worrying about legal issues.
And I'm going to also ask you, is there any value, do you feel like, to trademarking your brand?
Yes. Yes, definitely. You know, it depends really on the growth of your overall product, but it also helps you when fighting people who are stealing your content. You know, if you put your trademark on pretty much everything, so, you know, your blog posts, courses that you make, whatever it is, your products, you know, when inevitably somebody copies and misuses them.
Right.
You know, the trademark attack, trademark infringement attack is actually much stronger than copyright.
Really?
Yeah. One of the problems with copyright that people don't often realize, and that is a real problem on the internet, is that with copyright, you have to register within 90 days to, you know, to get statutory damages. And that may sound like an odd thing, but what statutory damages are is it gives the judge or jury, depending on the case, the right to assign, just an arbitrary figure to the infringement. It can be between $750 and $30,000. It's really egregious. It can be up to $150,000. And sometimes you can get your attorney's fees and costs. If you don't register in that 90-day period, you're kind of forced to prove actual damages.
Oh, wow.
And on the internet, that can be tough because let's say it's an image. It's on a random blog post on a site with 500 pages.
Right.
You know,
like how much value is that really?
Right, exactly. You know, now with trademark infringement, you know, the damages are much more severe. There's also presumptions of trademarks valid, you know, really shifts the burden onto the defendant.
Gotcha.
You know, if you were going to be sued, you know, for the two, you really would prefer to be sued for copyright infringement over trademarks. So yeah, trademarks are definitely worth doing. They're also extremely frustrating. I don't know if you've gone through the process.
It takes a long time. Yes, we have. We actually did. And, thankfully, you know, they got us, you know, that right type of classification to get it through, you know, because like it's really fine with your business. If there's anything that infringes on other businesses within that, you know, with that in that classification of business, you'll be, you know, not accepted.
Right.
And it's kind of like that fine line of just finding your little sweet spot that you can register it in. And I think it's also important for businesses if they want to exit their business too, right? To actually say, hey, you know, these are assets of the business.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I think one of the things that, you know, you raise a great point that people don't think about is, you know, how are you going to exit your business, particularly with an internet business? You know, what ultimately is the goal if you reach your growth?
Right.
You know, your growth, are you going to sell it? Are you going to pass it on to your kids? If you're going to sell your site, you know, you really need to think about, well, what's the value of that site? Yeah. In the early days of the internet, it was the design. You know, and how that site looked. And unless you're in an entertainment field or the adult field or something like that, that doesn't really matter anymore that much because, you know, most sites are module, even customized site, a lot of it's going to be module. That's just where we move to. So what's the value? Yeah. Well, the value is often your mailing list, your client list, your IP, you know, your trademark. You know, if you could use the name Google, you know, with your products, you know, that has a huge impact on your credibility, those kinds of things. So yeah, trademarks are definitely valuable and copyright is valuable too. You know, with copyright, it's kind of a pick and choose situation. With blog posts, should you copyright them? Well, you know, the technical answer is yes, but you know, in the real world, you know,
it's kind of like you must have a lot of followers on that each blog to really be worth it.
Right. Whereas if you developed a course or something of that sort, that's more, fixed and more of a detailed situation, you know, in that case, it probably makes more sense to go ahead and do it.
So any courses, obviously music, lyrics, people copyright, but obviously a blog post, unless you've probably had a ton of people, you know, that you felt like this was going to just change the world because of this blog, probably going to be okay not to to copyright that.
Right. And, you know, and within the, you know, the paradigm of the internet, even if somebody has copied your blog post, you know, sometimes it makes more sense instead of sending them a cease and desist letter to instead send them, you know, a letter saying, hey, you know, I saw you copied this and I appreciate it, but could you include a link back to my site?
Yes.
You know, and then you get the SEO value out of that.
Right.
Potentially
right.
some traffic.
Because if you're writing good blogs, people are going to be inspired by it and maybe possibly. Right.
And you have the sharing economy. Yeah. Well, and you have the sharing economy, which, you know, confuses things. A lot of times, you know, some of my clients get fired up about, you know, people copying their stuff. But a lot of times, you know, people aren't doing it maliciously, you know, in an age where we have social media and you repost
right.
things.
Right.
You know, a lot of people think that, you know, if anything, they're doing you a favor. In some cases, they are.
They are. Absolutely. If you didn't have, if you don't get shares on posts, you won't go viral. I mean, that's right. how you go viral on social media is shares.
Right. I had somebody call me once, you know, there was one of their articles was being, a big chunk of it was being used in Huffington Post with, you know, a link back to their site right there in the middle of the article. And,
wow.
You know, and I was saying, well, how much traffic are you getting? You know, and it was substantial, you know, and I said, do you really want to complain about that?
Yeah. Do you want to really sue them for traffic?
Right. You know, and then they start thinking about it and realized, you know, it's like, you know, in the blackout world, there are people who will pay a couple grand for that kind of a link.
Right. Absolutely. Of course. And also just the implied endorsement.
Right. Exactly.
Implied endorsement that you're a credible source. You know, they're almost using your content as a credible source.
Sure. Now, there can be the other side to that. I had a problem, you know, with my own situation where I noticed I was getting traffic from my skinhead forum. And I went there and they had, you know, listed one of my articles. It didn't have anything to do with race. It was just a random copyright article, but it linked back, which was, you know, nice in that sense. But of course, you know, he went to the search results and suddenly I'm right. appearing on this forum, you know.
Crazier forum.
Yeah.
And that's another good point, folks, is monitor what's being said about you, right? I mean, your brand, you can set up a Google, you know, search alert. If anyone's talking about your brand in the news, media, blogs, it might pull it up. And that way you can monitor those things because obviously there are people writing. If your brand gets big, people are going to be writing about you. Look at Elon Musk.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Everyone thinks Elon Musk is like falling apart. It's like, dude, I mean, I don't think the guy cares that much. I mean, he's so rich that, yeah, he can put a 420 quote out about marijuana and smoke some weed and drink some whiskey on Joe Rogan and be a human somewhat because he's in California. It's legal. But most importantly, you know, it's just everyone's got a voice. You know, everyone's got a blog. Everyone's got a voice. And so I think a lot of these guys that are billionaires, they don't really care. A $10 million fine from the SEC, I don't think he really cares that much.
Yeah, you know, I think that, yeah, there's also a certain, you know, there's a certain view now, or at least a certain thought that, you know, trying to be all things to all people with your brand is, you know, kind of a mistake because it comes right. off as, you know, not being realistic. And, you know, you look at the Nike Kaepernick thing, obviously there are certain people that are going to be receptive to that and certain people who are not.
Right.
And in the marketing and advertising community, there's complete fascination that they went that direction because
absolutely.
People who are not going to be happy are probably, you know, not going to purchase from them again, you know, permanently.
Right.
And so there's a thought, well, you know, is that where marketing is now that, you know, instead of trying to be all things to everybody, you know, you pick your market and, you know, you really focus on things that they would be receptive to.
So they're giving up the older crowd and maybe just going right for the millennial. Just saying,
right.
We're giving up on these old folks and they're not buying Nikes anymore. We're going after the 16 to 25 year old.
Right. And there's also, you know, there's a lesson in that, you know, regardless of your views on that, but there's a lesson in that for smaller entrepreneurs with the privacy laws and all these things coming out. What we're seeing is the internet, the worldwide internet from an economic perspective and a business perspective is not real anymore. You're going to have to choose, you know, your markets. And you need to be cognizant of this. If you want to get ahead of the game right now on the internet, this is what you need to be thinking about because, you know, the cost of compliance to comply in all these different regions that are now issuing their own rules and regulations is going to be prohibitive. And so you need to think about, okay, here's my product, my sales, what's my core, you know, service. You know, can I afford to be in these other countries? You know, in the EU, if you're getting, you know, 50 sales a year from the EU, and you're making, you know, whatever it is, $2,000. Well, do you want to spend $20,000 trying to comply with the GDPR?
Right.
You
doesn't
know,
make much sense.
No, it doesn't. And so, and you're seeing this with U.S. businesses. I think a lot of people are shocked. I know people in the EU were very shocked. You know, you can't view the Los Angeles Times website in the EU.
Wow.
Yeah, because it makes no sense for them to be there because, you know, as we all know, journalism's having a huge difficulty trying to figure out how to monetize their content online.
Absolutely.
And so a lot of newspapers use a cookie-based system, and you'll see all those cheesy ads and everything, but it's a viable way for them to make revenues. Well, that cookie-based system just doesn't work in the GDPR. Yeah. It's just not functional.
Right.
And so there are literally thousands of websites in the U.S. that cannot be viewed in the EU. And other sharp retailers have also taken that move. Dick's Sporting Goods, you know, pretty well-known retailer, they block all the EU.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, if you're not selling stuff there, really, or if it's very minimal, why would you want to have to comply and all this extra resources?
Right.
Facebook is different because you got people there.
Right. You know, but even then, you're going to have to think about, well, how do you categorize, you know, any marketing that you do on those sites, if you're using Facebook or AdWords or wherever.
Right.
You know, the business, U.S. business model, as you pointed out, is, you know, collecting data and monetizing it. That's really kind of, even for small sites, even small blogs, you know, you build your mailing list and that's what you're doing. Well, in the EU, they're not receptive to that.
Wow.
And
yeah, I mean, that's how people build businesses out here now. I mean, the social followers of Kylie Jenner, she charges $500,000, folks, per Instagram post.
Right.
Upwards to $1 million per post.
Right. And in that situation, because she's on, you know, Instagram's forced to deal with the GDPR and she can, you know, issue those ads and everything. So she's probably okay. But for regular websites, you know, it's a much, much more difficult situation. And the GDPR is about to issue a new e-privacy regulation in addition to the GDPR that's pretty much going to squash email marketing.
Mm.
And so, you know, the EU is a heavily regulated region. And, you know, if you think about the biggest internet companies in the world, none of them are in the EU.
They all want to get out of there.
I mean, we laugh, but a lot of my clients are, not a lot, but, you know, a significant number of clients are from Europe. And the first thing they did was move.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you can't build an email list, I mean, that's like the world we live in today.
Right, you know, and the labor laws and all that kind of thing. And it's just a very different mentality.
Right.
And there's not necessarily anything wrong with that. It's just if you were going to launch a business, you know, the EU is kind of one of the last places you want to be.
Right. Well, my man, I appreciate all the value today. We're about to take you now into our Be Real Show Top 10.
Oh, okay.
Let's bring it. Apple or Android?
Apple.
Nice. Netflix or Disney?
Netflix.
Netflix and chill. All right. Instagram or Twitter?
neither, but Instagram.
Neither. That's okay. Chicken or steak?
Steak.
Laptop or an iPhone?
Laptop.
Spotify or Pandora?
Oh, I'm old school Pandora.
Pandora. Let's keep it old school. And they're going to get acquired by a series, possibly, I guess, here coming up. Movies or video games?
Oh, probably movies.
Movies. Reading books or listening to books?
I'm a reader.
I love it. Stocks or crypto?
Stocks. Although I think crypto is amazing. I just don't have the time to deal with it.
Yeah. And there's also just the custody thing. It's kind of interesting. Oceans or lakes?
Oceans.
Nice. And you live by a beautiful ocean out there in San Diego.
Yep.
I can also share with you a couple last things. Why do you love being you?
Why do I love being me?
Yeah. It's an interesting question, right?
A little narcissistic.
It is a little narcissistic. I like to figure out why people love being themselves, you know? Everyone's saying different things.
Oh, well, plenty of room for improvement. But I think probably, you know, I can look at my life and I haven't sat in a rut. I haven't accepted the rut. I've tried to go out and do different things. I mean, spent a year in Siberia. Not a lot of people do that.
Yeah, you've traveled the world.
Yeah. So, you know, I've made the effort, you know, for better or for worse, but, you know, haven't been willing to compromise. Although now that I'm over 50, that's compromises a bit more of the product.
Yeah, of course. But we're living longer, my man. So it's good. You know, people are living a lot longer.
I wish somebody told me that when I was 20, man. Now I'm going to pay for it.
Right. How do you typically like to start your day? What gets you in the motivational mindset, or what makes you, how do you get your day going?
Horrible answer. I'm not a morning person, so it's pretty much mainlining coffee and staggering around the room until caffeine hits. I'm a night person. You know, I'm up till 2 or 3 in the morning.
Got you. So. You get your insight or your energy at night.
I do. You know, it's, I don't know, apparently vampires in my DNA or something, but you know, once daylight ends, I'm energized, and you know, I get a ton of work done, to be honest, in the middle of the night, because
that's awesome.
Getting calls or emails or anything. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's nice, quiet time, like blast music, but it's, you know, it's a good time to, yeah, pump things out.
And as an entrepreneur, you have to know when you work best, right? So it's like, it's important that you understand when you work best. If you're not a morning person, don't be it. Don't do stuff in the morning. Let's just be real. I mean, you got 24 hours to work.
You know, and I think that's also a benefit of, you know, not being in the cubicle system.
Yes.
You know, not being
a
salaried person, is that, you know, you have that ability, you know, to pick that and to know that, particularly if you're, you know, working on your own, but even with partners, you know, because of the partners, I had a partner, I owned a design and SEO company about 10 years ago. And you know, the partner did the programming and everything of that sort. And yeah, he worked, you know, he was a morning person. I was a night person, and you know, we leave emails for each other, and that was about it, but it worked out really well.
Yeah. If you could find someone to do, you know, at the end of the day, everyone's got different energies, you know, I just always find that too. And so, but most importantly, I like the strategy that you have in that you aren't getting interrupted, because I talk to people that are very successful entrepreneurs, and I don't know how they're getting so big, because they still are like, what did I get done today? I've just been fighting fires all day. You know, they aren't getting a lot of stuff done. Some of them are old school. Some of my customers, you know, old school, not as progressive. But I always think, well, why don't you work at a different time? You know, like, just have your secretary just say no, you know, no calls until 10. And then at least like in the morning, you're getting things done, you know, but.
Yeah, there's, you know, I was reading something by Anthony Bourdain when he wrote his first book, and he was talking about getting up at 5 a.m. and how, you know, he didn't really read much on how to write a book or anything of that sort, because, you know, frankly, he didn't have time. You know, he had a couple hours where there was just silence. And so he just busted it out in his own style and what have you. And obviously that ended up working out pretty well as far as, you know, getting published and everything. So yeah, no, I agree with that. Are you a morning person or a night person?
I work all times. You know, I work at night. I work in the morning. I have to be forced to wake up early because my wife wakes up early for her job. So I'm up early. I like to take naps during the day. Throughout the day, I'll take a little 30-minute nap just to refresh the mind or close my eyes sometimes, because, you know, working on a computer or just doing podcasts can be exhausting, you know, on these days, you know, so sometimes you need to have that break as an entrepreneur and treat yourself to that.
Absolutely.
And it makes you stronger later.
Absolutely. I often have a 3:30 meeting.
Yes, I like that. I like that. Put that in my calendar. 3:30 reoccurring meeting. It's a reoccurring one. It has to happen, too. It has to happen. Is there a skill that you're wanting to master right now? Is there something you're really working at to try to get better at?
Programming, actually.
That's awesome.
I'm fascinated by hacking.
Is there something like an online school, or how are you learning specifically?
So far I've just been reading mostly, to be honest, but, it's, you know, the world of hacking, I've had some clients come to me that I couldn't handle, cause that's just not a field that I know well enough to be comfortable in.
Yeah.
And the penalties are brutal, but I do find it to be a fascinating field, because, you know, everything that I get back from talking to people who are in the know is that, you know, security online is pretty much a joke. You know, for the vast majority of websites that are up. And so I find it just to be a fascinating area. I think that, you know, because we're going into an era of so much regulation, frankly, they're going to overdo it. They already are. That they're going to push a lot of people onto the dark web. And what we think of the dark web now is this, you know, horrible place with, you know, child porn and drugs. It's going to become more of a, perhaps, you know, an unregulated capital market, where maybe there are more basic things, even just, you know, SEO services,
right,
and software for sale and things like that, that people don't want to meet, you know, the regulations that are out there.
Interesting.
Because if you have cryptocurrency and you can sell
absolutely, you know,
anonymously,
it's a Monero or something, you know, you're good. Dash, Monero.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you get into those markets and, you know, you look at some of the markets, even the dark markets, and now they have software and they have, you know, and some of that software is, you know, if you look closely at it, it's being sold by the company that created it. It's not people that are stealing it.
Right. Yeah. It's being monetized.
Right. Well, you know, then they don't have to hit, you know, some of the stupid regulations. I'll give you an example of some of the bizarre regulations that are out there. You know, there's a Florida law that says if you have a website, you know, you have to have your name, your business name, your actual address, you know, on your site.
Oh, wow.
And nobody does that.
Right.
you know, and, you know, one of the things I always bring up with privacy, you know, in the EU, you know, as bad as the EU is, France is just even worse. France, if you, you know, you have Facebook and you have a family and you have kids, your kids have a birthday and, you know, you go ahead and you post pictures of your kids at their birthday party for your family to see everywhere. Well, in France, you just broke the law and you can go to jail for up to a year.
Oh my God, are you serious?
Well, you violated the privacy of your kids.
Wow.
Now, are they sending people to jail? No.
No.
But you know, you have these kinds of laws out there. And in the U.S., you know, you're seeing, you know, the sales tax. The Supreme Court just said, yes, states can collect sales tax. Okay, well, if you're just starting out, you know, how are you going to comply with that? How are you going to figure out what the sales tax requirements are in every, you know, county, every state, and there'll be programs for it. And, you know, eventually it'll all get worked out. But for a lot of people, you know, that's a huge burden. And, you know, at some point you hit what's called in the legal circles idiot rules, which is if you follow the rules, you're an idiot.
Yeah. Right. The more like break the rules and then pay later if you get fined, like Elon or some of these guys, you know, I mean.
Well, it is. You know, it's interesting because the internet, particularly with the dark web, is, you know, you have an avenue to do business without people knowing.
Right.
And with cryptocurrencies, I have to be honest, I'm just shocked that they haven't tried to go in and shut down or heavily regulate cryptocurrencies.
I know. I mean, they're doing everything they can, but the crazy thing is it's hard for them to regulate.
It is.
It's almost impossible. It's almost relatively impossible because it's a self-regulated community by the miners and by the community itself. It regulates itself, really. I mean, it's a unique concept. It's definitely... I've been kind of always peaked in my interest in 2015 and started getting in a little bit, dipping my toe in. And I've built up a little crypto. You know, I got a little crypto, but it is a super volatile market too. You know, and even though we're seeing a little less volatility this year due to like the all these more kind of institutional money.
Right.
But I feel like the true essence of it is absolutely right. I mean, people do not have to do business out there with an internet website. They could do it through some other intermediary. Like you said, right. a back-end portal that sells social media marketing services, and then someone pays me a Monero.
Well, the interesting thing is going to be, you know, to see who becomes the Amazon of the dark web.
Yeah.
Because if you can, you know, sell through those markets.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and the fact we're seeing institutional money go into crypto is a sign that it's, you know, it's not going away.
TD Ameritrade, I mean, they're all trying to either make money or figure out how Binance, for instance, made so much money.
Right.
Binance made more money with like 200 employees than like the Royal Dutch Bank or something. Some crazy. It has like 50,000 employees and like has been here for so long, and they made more money in 6 months than they've made in the last year, and they have 200 employees.
Yeah, you know,
it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Well, the interesting thing about it, I mean, it just opens so many doors. I mean, you know, crypto is a fiat currency. There's nothing in particular that backs it up, but it also highlights, I think, for a lot of people for the first time that. So is the dollar.
Right.
So is, you know.
So is everything.
Everything. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's not backed by any assets. Now, I mean, certainly you have a government standing behind it, but, you know, the idea of, okay, well, what is money? Right. What's the actual value of that? You know, if, you know, you can't eat a dollar if it came to that. Yeah. You know, so what are these values and what does it mean to have money and what is the value of information or products or services? And that opens a whole can of knowledge, if you will, for
sending the money. You know what I mean? That's why all these hackers want you to send them crypto.
Right.
Because sending the money has never been easier. I could send you $1 million in crypto right now. I can't send you 1 million gold bars. It's going to take me some security, some, you know what I mean? It's going to cost me a lot in shipping, you know? I mean,
I think it's, you know, and I mean, it's the internet again revolutionizing everything. You know, in the EU, you're seeing the new copyright directive they're trying to pass because, you know, copyright law was mostly established well before the internet came along. And as probably anybody who's tried to do anything on the internet can tell you, it doesn't really work well with, you know, the digital world. So you see in the EU, you know, they're trying to levy taxes on links to news. You know, if you think.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, and if you know, they're going to have filters for copyright infringement, all these different things. Wow. And really what needs to happen is there needs to just kind of be, you know, I don't know how you would do it, but have everybody sit down and just say, okay, let's start again from scratch.
Yeah, right.
Because, you know, I mean, if you think about the Stephen King book, okay, before the internet, you know, how could I commit copyright infringement? Well, I'd have to copy every page physically. Yeah. I'd have to make it. yeah, I'd have to make a new physical book.
Right.
You know, now were there people that would do that? Sure. But it's a pretty small group.
Yeah.
You know, now compared to online, it's, you know, right click, copy, you know,
copy paste.
Yeah. It becomes much easier. And, you know, and you see, you know, you see these problems, you see everything. You know, it's just all radically changing. AI in my profession, you know, the legal profession, most of us thought we're pretty well insulated from the digital world and the internet, but there are now AI programs you can buy that will go out and do the legal research for you. So you don't really need younger attorneys in a firm anymore.
Right. They're doing some of the prep work for you, right? They're kind of preparing research for you based on your insights. You're obviously still going to be the top of the food chain is still going to eat. I mean, let's just be real. The lawyers are not going away. I mean, that, when it comes down to it, there's no AI that's going to sit there and fight cases in the court. However, they probably will, like in my business too, help prep research for content. What, here, let's give us, you know, 20 new engaging posts that maybe would work with our audience, you know, and prep some work for us, right? I mean, I think it's kind of helpful in a way too.
It is, you know, but it raises a bigger societal question than that, you know, the more that we digitalize or automate goods or services, you know, how do you deal with unemployment?
Right. Yeah, that's where like Elon Musk or one of these guys would say that we're going to have a state wage that everyone gets paid a couple grand.
Right.
Just because, because that's the only way that you can do it.
Well, I mean, we become more efficient and we eliminate, you know, jobs. I mean, you know, for all the, you know, talk about unions and everything, you know, a lot of the manufacturing process that we had, regardless of the country you're in, you know, was physical labor and you needed 300 people to do something.
Right.
If all that's replaced by, you know, two robots now.
Right.
Well, what do you do with those 300 people?
Absolutely.
You know, not everybody can be a stockbroker. I mean, it's.
Yes. Yeah. They always say like, oh, there's going to be better jobs. It's like, well, maybe these people like wouldn't even want to do those better jobs. I mean, maybe they wouldn't be physically capable or qualified to do these physical jobs or different types of jobs you're talking about, mostly sales jobs, because most people don't want to do sales, you know.
I mean, how many salespeople can you actually have?
Right.
Know?
Yeah.
And a lot of that's going to be automated even still. There's Google just released there. If you go onto YouTube and you do a search for Google AI,
I saw something with this.
Yeah, they just released their latest version and you know, they're showing examples where the AI calls a hair salon to make an appointment.
I saw this, dude. It was so amazing.
Yeah. And the other person can't tell.
I couldn't tell, dude. And she was like saying, and wait, and like kind of all these little intricacies that humans do. It was awesome.
Right. Well, it is amazing, but it also raises huge questions. Because if we go to that, you know, if we reach that level, then, you know, a lot of jobs are going to be eliminated, but then there's also the question of, you know, how do you address, you know, communications, what's valid, what's not valid.
Yeah. You know, I can only imagine people are going to be doing crazy stuff with this AI.
Well, yeah, you know, and you know, then you get into the, you know, the feared Terminator situation where something becomes viable on its own and how would you know?
And say bye, Richard, bye, Travis. I
mean, you know, the Amazon example, they had the two AIs, and it was very primitive and not a danger at all. But, you know, they never expected them to do something, which was they started speaking in their own language.
Yeah. That's going to be a problem.
Right. And the programmers couldn't understand it.
That's going to be a problem. I mean, it's like a cat talking to a cat.
Yeah. And
they're saying something. I don't care what you say, folks. I don't think they can. We can't hear it. We don't know exactly, but they're saying something to each other. They know something. There's an intuition and energy, something there. Right. Or a dog talking to a dog, you know, and it's like, that's the scary thing with AI. They start talking to each other and saying, hey, we don't need these humans. Peace.
Right. And historically we have, you know, a tendency to plug things in before thinking about it.
Right.
You know, there were people when they did the first atomic test who thought that, you know, it might actually, you know, light the entire atmosphere on fire and burn off oxygen and kill everybody on the earth. And they still went ahead and did it.
Turn the switch. Let's go, Richard. It's all worth it. That's so crazy. You're right. It's so, sometimes like people just think like, let's get this thing out there. Let's monetize it. Let's put this prescription drug out there. I mean, like think about Oxycontin and like Vicodin and things like that. I mean, I know personally many friends and people that have passed this earth because of it. And think about how many people have been affected by it? Well, was that a good idea for pain management?
No.
Maybe there was a better one. Maybe there's some, you know, now they're finding cannabis is better, you know, CBD and some of these other things. Maybe that was better, but obviously Vicodin was faster to monetize. Oxycontin, quicker to quicker to make money on it, you know. And now there's like, you know, these epidemics. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But now, can you share with us a couple last things, my man? Be real tonight for dinner. If you could take anyone out to dinner to eat there in the lovely San Diego area, who would it be?
You already said his name, Elon Musk.
Yeah. What fascinates you about Elon?
I just think he's open to new ideas, and he doesn't really let anything limit, you know, what his ambitions are. Mm. I think that's interesting. I'm particularly interested in AI, and I know he is as well, so I'd love to have a chat with him on that.
Yeah, he has some serious questions about it, I have a feeling.
Yes.
And I'd want to have him in my corner if I was going to fight it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. You know, a lot of people.
Take Elon and Jeff Bezos first, and then we'll be good.
There you go. Yeah, no, I think a lot of people have questions about AI, and you see some of the people that are working on it, and you ask them about, you know, potential dangers, and their eyes kind of gloss over, and it's pretty obvious they haven't really thought about it.
Yeah, they're thinking like, oh, this thing's cool. This is awesome. Let's monetize.
Right, exactly.
Let's make money. Let's be Google. At the end of a long day, do you have a favorite show or something you like to do or enjoy at the end of a, you know, long night? Or you're working at night, kind of. You're getting
At night. So.
So, or even during the daytime, do you have something you enjoy doing?
I actually live out in a national forest, so I grab the dog and head out, and we go for
some peace, some quietness. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's not too bad. It's a rough life.
Rough life, my man. Well, folks, you've been hanging out with my man Richard Chapo and Travis Too Tall and Huff. I want to thank you again for your time today, and let's keep being real. What another epic episode. And if you enjoyed the episode today, can you please do me a favor and subscribe to our podcast, The Be Real Show, on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform? And also take a little time today, if you don't mind, and give your boy T Huff a review. I would really super appreciate it. And thank you so much for listening today.